This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
I want you to get together.
And we are rolling with Paul from Understanding Conspiracy and his new project, Understanding Creativity. How are you this evening?
I'm very good, Carmen. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Thank you. I'm excited. When I very first heard you announce that you would be doing the Understanding Creativity, what a great idea. And I was looking at it today, and you have over 3,000 followers in less than a month. So it's definitely gaining traction. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps already having a channel with about 90,000 already. That certainly gets people interested quick enough. But there's actually a whole new audience on there who have no idea what I do, who I am, what I've talked about over the past 10 years. And to be honest, the things I'm saying on that channel, I think it's completely out of left field for them. They're like, what is this crazy guy on about right now? I just came here thinking he's going to tell me about art history, and instead he's telling me about complete weird occult crazy history that I had no idea existed. So it's had a mixed review. I think the algorithm's been very quickly trying to figure out where to put my videos and who to show them to. And it's been showing them to like art buffs, you know, people who are like in the art scene who play that game and want to, you know, think they're really clever and pretentious and cool. And then I've come along telling them, no, you're all just a bunch of weirdos who need to get your act together. And I think they're a bit offended, to be honest. And it's been fun. It's been really fun. I'm not going to lie. I'm having a good time with it. And it really is like a passion project of mine. It's kind of... I'm the conspiracy theorist guy, you know, I've wrote the book on the Nephilim clowns, and I'm the Christian contrarian. And all the time I've been doing that, I've been kind of, my history is art. That's where I come from. I have a degree in fine art. I came from that world, that realm, you know, and I had dreams of being an artist growing up and getting my pictures in the galleries and paintings and drawings. And when my dreams were shattered, because I realized it's just a giant con and the whole system's corrupt, I kind of, you know, went on to do my conspiracy stuff and kind of left that life behind. So it's kind of personal, you know. And as time's gone on, I've realized kind of, no, I'm not leaving that behind. I'm going to say what I think about the whole situation. So I made the channel to kind of just vent more than anything. And I've not really made any venting videos yet, just the first one. But I've had... Susan Faraday on, who's a art lecturer from...
She's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, I know, right? How lucky am I that she came along and messaged me? And she's been a long-time subscriber of Understanding Conspiracy. And she said, maybe I can offer something for the new channel. I've got these lectures, these series of lectures that I've done in the past. And I've kind of got these slideshows put together that kind of incorporates a lot of the conspiracy stuff we've talked about in the past. But also just the art scene in general, and like a complete new take on it from a conspiracy perspective. And I had a sit-down with her, and we had like a couple of hour conversation. She showed me all these presentations she kind of has and what the gist of them will be.
And what a great blessing.
It was. And I said, this is fantastic. Let's just do it. You know? So we did the first one on Gustav Klimt, an Austrian painter from the early 20th century. And, the reception was incredible. It went viral. It's on like 36,000 views now or something. I don't know. I've lost track. I've not really been watching, to be honest, but it blew up quickly, you know, and it really rattled the cage of a lot of people in the art scene to give this breakdown of The Kiss, this famous painting, which is quite well known for, which is obviously seen by most mainstream art historians and people who go to see the painting in Vienna. It's kind of seen as this beautiful symbol of love, you know, of passion and two people embracing one another. And you know, Susan came along and said, absolutely not, it has nothing to do with that whatsoever. That's a complete lie. It's actually quite literally a representation of Apollo raping Daphne from the Greek mythology. And that's what it was originally titled to begin with. And when you look closely at the painting, you realize there's this woman who's clearly been drugged, trying not to be raped. And that's basically what the whole painting is actually about, you know? And I think a lot of people just didn't like the sacred cow being poked and, you know, the emperor has no clothes situation, just telling the truth as it is and what it really is. And so many people reacted so viscerally to us. Just how dare you mention that this is not about love? How dare you say my own personal interpretation is not what this piece of artwork is about, basically? All we did was give them the objective truth about what it really is about and what the artist really meant, you know, and they just did not like that. And that's the issue with art. It's too subjective today. People, it's about what they think and how it makes them feel, not the reality of what it really is about or what it truly represents. And I want to bring that objectivity back into the art world with this channel. And again, Susan's on board. And we've done two presentations now. The second one on Georgia O'Keeffe, another sweetheart.
Both of them were amazing. Yeah. I watched all of them. They're, you know, you've only been doing this for a month, so I got a chance to, I almost finished the domes, but man, the Klimt one, the thing that was the most disgusting to me was the laurels on his head. Mm-hmm. Because of what that meant. And do you want to share with people what that was?
Sure. I mean, I'm not like a Greek historian buff or anything. I'm learning as I'm going along with Susan, to be honest. And I'm learning things I didn't realize. And I interject to what I do know here and there. But it's clear that the laurel wreath headdress, which is the same thing worn by the people who win in athletics, shall we say, the Olympics, yep. They wear the laurel wreath, you know, because it's very much rooted in Greek mythology. Well, it's actually a crown worn by Apollo, made from the leaves plucked from Daphne. Daphne begs the gods to free her from what's about to happen. She's about to get raped by Apollo. He won't leave her alone. And she says, God, save me. So the gods turn her into a laurel tree. And that's, so he plucks the leaves off the tree in victory and wears them as like a crown. That's basically what that is. That's what that represents. And that's exactly what the man kissing the woman in the kiss is wearing around his head, because that's who he is. He's not it's not a good thing. It's not a good person. It's not a loving scene of embracing and wholesomeness. Like, it's kind of been sold to us. And this is another thing that the channel is going to point out. There's agendas behind artwork, and there are people who pay for these things, commission these things, put these things in the public, sell them for millions, move them around for stupid amounts of money, because they're in the business of money laundering, and they're in the business of promoting their ideologies, their mythologies, and their perspectives, while making the general public, who are completely ignorant to what's really going on, fawn over the worst possible things. And that's just life. That's every industry is like that in the conspiracy world. That's what they're doing to us in every industry all the time, be it music, art, film, media, whatever name you name it, you know, books, the rest of it. And the art world, the professional art world, is absolutely no different whatsoever. I mean, I think there was even in that presentation, she was talking about the stupid money that gets moved around. Yep. And it's kind of these big pieces of artwork. Another one, a portrait of Adele Bloch Bauer, which is like one of his lovers at the time, and very much, I think she was related to the Rothschilds through marriage in many ways. Big, powerful money person. He literally painted it with pyramids and eyes all over her dress. It was ridiculous, like very on the nose, you know. But that painting of her in this dress was bought by Oprah Winfrey for $33 million, and she never once even saw the thing. It didn't even move from the gallery. It stayed there. So she paid $33 million for a painting that stayed exactly where it was. And then about 3 years later, some Chinese person sold it for like $240 million from her, and it still stayed exactly where it was. That sounds to me like money laundering. Excuses sure to move big amounts of money around without being questioned. Who did Oprah really owe $33 million to, and what for? And what then? That was her excuse. You know, these are the real questions you have to ask, and this is what the game really is all about as well. It's powerful people using occult themed artwork as like a tongue-in-cheek reference to their own belief systems while moving massive amounts of money around and dodging tax and doing all sorts of crazy things. But we, the public, are supposed to just go and fawn over these things and go, how beautiful, how pretty, how avant-garde, how wonderful, how deep, when it's not. It's really none of those things. And that's just like the corruption of like the gallery industry, never mind just the philosophical degradation of beauty standards, which has been pushed through the industries as well, and just the disgusting things that are being passed as artwork today in the postmodern art world, you know. And that's something that's irked me greatly going through the art schools, and that's another thing I plan on completely railing against as time goes on. Not just the artists who are dead. I'm going to pick on the ones that are still alive doing this stuff as well, because no one dares say anything in the art industry. Everyone's kind of scared to be seen as that guy. You know, I don't want to be the one that, like, brings everybody down.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
I don't know. Everyone says, you know, you just don't get it or something like that. It's kind of, there's nothing to get. That's the gaslighting technique they're using here. It's not that deep. They come up with a big, long, pretty paragraph to kind of explain how that trash in the corner of the gallery means something, and how it's a representation of the ego of mankind and the destructive nature we have against nature itself, and how we need to learn to reduce our carbon footprint, blah, 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 whatever it means, you know. But that's just a bunch of bullshit they've just made up to justify a completely talentless piece of garbage artwork, which will be sold for millions for money laundering purposes. So it's got all just a giant con. And don't let anybody tell you you're just too dumb to understand, because it's not true. It's the gaslighting you. The truth is, we know when something objectively is beautiful and can be classed as something like a piece of artwork. We feel it when we see it. We know it when we see it, you know. And we're kind of being lied to on a mass scale lately, in the past maybe 30 to 40 years since postmodernism kind of really started to creep in. I'm saying no more. I think we're sick of it. I think we want standards back. I think there is such thing as beauty. It's not subjective. Mm-hmm. When something it really speaks to us on a deep, profound level, we know. And that is objectively beautiful. And I think we need to not be scared to say those things anymore. So that's what I'm going to do. And there's other channels who have done this before me, and I think I'm going to go out there and find them and get them on my channel to talk about it. And I think when there's a conversation happening, I feel like that's the best presentation method. Because if you just let me go, I'm going to say some things I probably shouldn't have said, you know. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Do you
think this one will be your more spicy channel or the other one, Understanding Conspiracy?
Well, Understanding Conspiracy, you have to be so careful with a channel like that. You know the game. You're in this as well. Like, if you say the wrong thing, they can just take it all away instantly. And they're watching us. They're waiting for us to make those mistakes, you know, and so you kind of have to play a language game when you have a conspiracy channel. You got to cover things up with code, and you got to hint at what you're talking about without actually saying the thing you're talking about. But I think if you have a channel that's just about art, you kind of have free rein to just critique. I feel like you can get away with that because it's classed under triviality, you know. So hopefully, I'm gonna push it. I'm gonna push the boundaries on this channel. I'm gonna say,
well, when you think about it, they've had like cinema critics forever. And so it is interesting how it is actually accepted to criticize the entertainment or the music industry or whatever. But for some reason, art has kind of been that sacred cow, but probably because what you're saying, the money that they are able to move around in it. And then when she made the point that the museums actually pay for their maintenance, you know, so we're all the ones lining up to go into that museum, pay all that money so that they get to keep their art beautiful. And you know what amazed me the most is I thought, isn't it so interesting that you do your first one and it has Klimt, and then there's Daphne, and Daphne is wearing a pendant, and the pendant is the clown, or you know, a clown like figure. I mean, what are the chances of the very first one you do that comes
out? Well, what she shows.
Crazy, but it shows you how prolific it is.
Yeah, well, it's not Daphne. Daphne was just one of the women who was being raped by Apollo. It was Athena, which is kind of like a patron.
Oh, that's right. It was Athena. My bad.
But for Vienna, of that time, she was like a patron goddess. She's everywhere in Vienna. She has statues of her all over the place.
That's right.
And it's kind of like a harking back to like Enlightenment, the Greek classicism, which like Vienna like modeled themselves after. And they kind of look like rose-tinted glasses looking back on that historical history. Not a very Christian place kind of in that sense, you know, and that you find Athena was everywhere. And Klimt painted Athena quite a lot for the same reason, because she was just a representative of that region, of that city, of that time. And there was obviously Pallas Athena as well, where she had this mini woman in her hand. But yes, Athena is known for having the Gorgon on her chest, which is a huge subject for my own work. Gorgons are basically just the Greek flavor of Nephilim. And the visage, the big wide grinning, buck-tooth, bulging-eyed, red crazy head you know, is on like the breastplates of armor, the shields, pendants, the kind of like charms used to ward away evil or scare enemies. And Athena started that trend. The story goes that Perseus killed Medusa, one of the three Gorgons, the three sisters, and gave the head to Athena as a gift, and she then wore the head on her chest. And she's a giant goddess, so it was a tiny little thing to her, you know, and that's how it started. And she's always depicted with the head of Medusa on her chest, and it looks like a giant clown.
I was like, oh my gosh, it does. And it did in the art, and also the Parthenon that there's the replica of in Tennessee that you showed. I can't recommend it enough. Like, I thought it was, I was actually shocked, because the first one I watched was the Georgia O'Keeffe. And I could not believe how intertwined all of the people are. You know, and how Nassau and all of the different people that were involved in different things for the military in the U.S. And it's just mind blowing. There's like no end to it.
Well, no. I mean, the tangents we go on in our conversations are ridiculous, because I'm a conspiratorial person. So when she's telling me this art history, I'm immediately going, wait a minute. Yeah. I know about that. I know about this. What about the, and like, I couldn't help but coming back a lot to this idea. There seems to be a common trend in modern art, and there seems to be like high priestess witches within that industry who are pretending to be artists, basically, to get away with being what they really are, which are occult witches. Kind of like principalities over regions. They're in charge of the witchcraft in that area and maintaining the illusions that need to be maintained in the industries to have control over the masses. It's kind of like, but they pose as, I'm just like an industry gallery artist or something like that. I'm just a bit edgy and weird because I'm an art person, you know. And it's kind of, I think, like that when you actually look at them and examine the behavior and the strange bedfellows they walk with, you know, and the people that surround them, it's kind of like they're not acting like an artist, and their artwork's terrible. It's kind of like a very convenient cover story to mask that they're actually just an outspoken witch to those who know. And for Georgia O'Keeffe, for example, and I like the way Susan mentioned it, says, you know, yes, you know, a black cape does not a witch make, but she had a lot of capes. She wore a lot of black capes all the time and hoods and things like this. And it's kind of, and it's true, she did. She was always dressed like a typical witch. Stereotypical witch. And not only that, very very much like an Eastern Korean version of shamanism. And I pointed that out. She was wearing big wide brimmed black hats and black robes with like a white neckerchief type thing. And then I said, this looks like exactly like what the shamans, the mudangs in Korea wear. It's the same thing. It's identical. And their job in Korea, when they dress this way with the hats, is to channel the spirits of the demons, to communicate with very rich patrons who have paid the Medang to channel spirits for them. And their job is to do a ritual, get possessed, and speak. And let the rich person speak to the demon through them. That's their job, you know. But in the West, we don't believe in that kind of stuff. And I cover this a lot in my own body of work. Like I said, there's like these cross-sections between what I already do here. And that kind of, I didn't even know all this until Susan told me. So even I'm learning here that it really is everywhere, and it isn't everything all the time. But I think Georgia O'Keeffe was probably just the same thing, just a Western version of what's going on over there, but it's hidden here. We're not supposed to know that's what she's doing. We're not supposed to know she's a witch. We're not supposed to know she's quite literally a demon channeling shaman of the Western world. We're supposed to think she's just an artist, just a weird eccentric.
Well, it's crazy
or something,
too,
you know,
when you think about it. What I guess that was like the 1960s 50s ish? I don't know.
A bit earlier than that.
Oh, okay. So earlier than that, then comes Maria Abramovich. And then there's that other creepy one with the black fingers that she's in fashion. Michelle, starts with an L. Have you not seen her? She is so creepy. Paul, she's so creepy.
You need to send me a name and the links. I'll do something about that.
Okay. Yeah. No, she is so, like, I don't know if she has like the tips of her fingers tattooed, but they're black, like all the way like to here. And she wears this really creepy stuff. She looks like she's 70 years old and she's dating a famous fashion designer who's far younger than her. And she's been in all these photo shoots with Travis Scott. And
since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Yeah, just really, really bizarre.
Well, that's the thing. They usually do know famous people. They all know really famous people all the time.
Like, it's like they've got different ones for different decades that are in charge of the arts. It's weird.
It seems like O'Keefe was given a project and she was in charge of kind of documenting and presiding over the atom bomb narrative, the nuclear narrative, you know, the creating of weapons of mass destruction narrative. And now, if you're in a conspiracy world, it was pretty contentious for us. We understand they might not even be real. Like, that's a whole rabbit hole if you haven't been down that one. But it's kind of like they don't actually have nuclear weapons that could wipe out cities in an instant. Like, that's completely made up fiction that they've kind of...
I agree with you. I know a lot of people don't, but yeah, I definitely agree with you.
I've had comments telling me I'm ridiculously insane for even contemplating. I have an uncle's friend, cousins who works in a nuclear plant and knows it's real. It's like, and it's kind of, oh, everyone knows a guy somewhere. And I'm wondering if those comments are even real half the time as well. Oh, you happen to just know a guy who made a nuclear bomb, do you? Like, of course you do. It's kind of, it's that type of thing. It's kind of how convenient for my narrative that I just support, that you have a perfect contradictory thing to say. And it's kind of, I think we've had the wool pulled over our eyes a little bit. Just the way NASA has lied to us in a very big way, and they do it through compartmentalization. I'm sure there are many people who work for that organization who really do believe that they're sending satellites into space, you know, and I've worked on the thing. I know it's real, that type of stuff. And I think the same thing happened in that industry of nuclear atomic bomb creation. And it seems like O'Keefe could quite... This is the smoking gun. An artist living in the desert who paints flowers that look suspiciously like vaginas. Okay. She's allowed to just walk freely in and out of a top military US security place where a guy just happens to work on a secret project called the Manhattan Project, where she grew up, by the way, and came from, right? Which is involved in creating the first atomic bomb. And she can just walk in and out whenever she wants and have free reign. That does not happen. Okay, that does not happen. And it's more likely the whole thing was a ritual. I've heard people saying comments, which I didn't even realize, and maybe there's some more work I need to do here, but it was actually, the whole thing was a witchcraft summoning ritual using explosives to try and summon a homunculi. I've heard this one before. The whole thing was just an occult summoning ritual that was going on in this desert. And it had nothing to do with making a bomb. That was the cover story.
It was the same story with the Jack Parsons stuff.
Jack Parsons himself, who was kind of like in the same time doing similar work, working with explosives as well. And he was a heavily outspoken occultist. Aleister Crowley initiates, you know, and working intimately with him, did like him to Pan recitals with every experiment he did. It's like a through and through Satanist. Wasn't even lying about it, you know, Jack Marvel Parsons or something like this. And Susan was saying it seems like the Marvel Comics was based on this guy as well, which is, again, odd connections. We're talking about art here, throwing it in there, why not? But the whole thing, that whole time period was so strange when you look back on it through this lens. And it's kind of, why were rocket scientists and explosive nuclear physicists hanging out with artists in the desert? It's just so strange, unless all of it was just an art piece, all of it was a show, all of it was a scripted lie. And it's kind of what she was painting at that time was kind of very odd stuff. And Susan showed it. It's kind of, why was she making these things? What was it really representing and trying to show? And I think people don't realize that art is not just pretty pictures on a piece of paper necessarily. Art can be used as a tool to manipulate people. It can be used as a tool to exert influence over people. Art is used every day to convince people of false narratives through media, through the news. News is art. News is a performance. And people believe all sorts of false narratives and live by them as though they're real, thanks to that particular form of artwork, which is magic. That's what it is. If you can make people believe something and act and behave a certain way without ever meeting them in person or touching them or speaking to them, but simply through images and noises, artwork, then you're a magician. That's what you realize. That's what magic really is. Well, I guess
that's
really
what a lot
is,
of
you know?
Pastors are then, because that's been my pet peeve with a lot of churches and the way they've been infiltrated and the way they literally are performing, like performance arts based, you know, everything that they do is about, you know, creating and captivating, you know, the imagination, or what are they could to entertain is to captivate the mind. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about that, then that's where I get frustrated with sometimes. Like I've just loved watching you and JT and, even Jay Dreamer, you guys all just are good guys. Like, you're just really good people. And there's a lot of people who are growing their channels who are not, and they have an agenda and they are doing their art, and it is almost a ritual over people. And so it is really great that you're teaching people how to look for these things, because there was symbols. Like you said, he had the pyramids with the eyes. I also was thinking about how he had like predominantly gold and black, which supposedly Satan's throne is some sort of black and gold stone. Who knows what it is, but I thought that was really interesting too, that he was really into just that black and gold for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of his signature move.
Even when Klimt did go to color and anything else, it was depicting orgies involving children and death looming over them. It was all very quite dark, really. But then everyone always wants to look at these things and says, oh no, it's symbolic of the process of life and aging or something like that. It's like, no, it's not. It's not. He was seeing something, probably a part of these secret society parties in some way and orgies that possibly involved children, and he painted it. He painted what he saw. And it's that simple, really. Stop like romanticizing it and coming up with subjective delusions in your own mind about what you think he was trying to represent.
The picture that you guys showed, I mean, I was kind of shocked. First of all, I hadn't seen that one. But second of all, like that baby is like front and center. Like it's not, its genitals are like right out there. Susan had said, oh, they were supposedly just had a baby and they're celebrating or something. And I was like, I've never seen a woman that's just had a baby look like that.
It was an odd way to celebrate as well. A very strange way to celebrate. And let's just have a voodoo looking skeleton on the side looming over the whole thing while we're at it, you know, covered in purple and black, which, by the way, is the main color of voodoo witchcraft in Haitian voodoo. And it's kind of everything about it was just seeped in the occult and witchcraft and Satanism, but it's masked under this pretty colors, naked women, you know, beauty, flowers, things like this, gold. And that's how they do it. You know, they package it in a pretty image and sell it to you. You know, the poisons goes down easy with a bit of sugar. And that's basically all this is. It's just like a very old version of it. It's like, this is like 1912, you know, 1910s. This is over 100 years ago and then some. And it's, you know, back then, in like the late 19th century, early 20th century, this is how they did it. This is the Illuminati media of the day, you know, and it wasn't done through like radio or film like it's done today, or mass print. It didn't have any of those things in the ways we have them today. And they had paintings, they had art movements, they had galleries, they had theaters, they had different methods of doing these things. I've talked about the theater of the time. I talked about the creation of the circus, and all of it was occult based, and the Freemasons ran all those industries of the time. You know, it's all in my book. And the art galleries of the time were run also by wealthy well-connected Freemasons of the time, no doubt. I bet I know if I just look, I'll find out that that's the case. Because it's always the case. Every time I've done my research, is they all know each other. They're all in one big club. We're not in it. And they're laughing at us. And they produce artwork. They put it in front of the public. And we pay for it, like I said, lap it up. And we believe the exoteric interpretation they've given us. But esoterically, for the initiated, it's all occultism. It's all Satanism. It's all Luciferianism. It's always, every single time. And it never changed. It never stopped being that. Today, we just have a different version, a different method. They have new ways of doing it today. And again, this is what my channel is about. I'm going to go through and explain that clearly, because I think people, and this is what I really want to drive home, people are confused about what magic is. They're really confused about that aspect. Mm-hmm. I think Hollywood has kind of created a silly image in the mind of when I say magic.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
And if it's not like a man pulling a rabbit out of a hat or something like that, or a never-ending handkerchief or something silly, like practical stage magic, you know, which can be debunked easily thanks to, you know, Penn and Teller who have their own show going, like, how do you do it type of thing. That's one type of thing, card trick magic, you know, whatever. And then if not that, then it's the Hollywood Harry Potter style magic of sparkles flying out of pieces of sticks, you know what I mean, and twigs or whatever. And it's kind of, they have this image of like a fantasy magic of some kind, and neither of those are really what magic is. Right. None of it has anything to do with real practicing occultic magic, witchcraft. It's art, and people don't want to hear that. It makes me sound like some kind of puritanical weirdo. You know what I mean? Who wants to like make everybody just like live like the Amish and do nothing and have no fun? But you need to know this: art is magic. It's witchcraft. All witches really do is make artwork. All wizards are doing are producing things that manipulate your worldview. That's magic. That's how they do it. That's what it really is. That's all it's ever been. And any, you can fantasize it over it and imagine it to be something it's not as much as you want. You can think, oh, magic is summoning spells with sparkles or something. Or you can imagine, oh, magic is just, you know, card tricks and illusion and mirrors and smoke and mirrors. But it's not. It's simply producing artwork. You produce something that changes somebody's opinion, you're a magician. That's the truth about the situation. And that's why you should always be extremely careful, especially as Christians. And we're made in God's image. God's a creator. And so are we. And we need to realize that we have extreme power. We should have to give an account of every word for a reason, because it matters. It produces matter. It has an effect on reality. Everything we do, everything we create, we have to be conscious of what we're doing and what we're putting out there in the world, because it will change the world every time. And the world is a magical place. Okay. And like I said, I suppose intent can have something to be said here. Like, well, I'm a good magician. I only create good things. It's kind of like, well, if you're not aligned with Jesus Christ, everything you produce is just rotten to the core. It's not conducive. It will not produce good fruit. It's simple. And I want to bring that back to reality as well. I want people to realize, look, most of the artwork we've represented our entire life is made by bad people who are occultists, who have bad intentions. And if they're not even a part of the club, then they've been promoted because they have really bad moral frameworks. It's that simple. They got put in the galleries because they align perfectly, or at least help towards producing a society that's corrupt. And there's a lot of useful idiots in the industry, believe me, a lot. You know, who have no idea that they're contributing to that degradation, but that's just the way it is.
I've always said that about books too, like in particular, like self-help books or things like that. Because if you do not know that person's state of mind or what they're angry at, what their agendas are, you could be taking advice from somebody who is really coming from a bad place. And so absolutely the same thing for art. When you now start this channel, and you think about your art and your art history that you learned, and do you, have you already like rewound like so many images in your head, or were you aware of it when you were going through that?
When I was in art school, which was would have been 2011 to 2014. So we're going back over a decade here when I started this thing. And the channel didn't get published. My channel, Understanding Conspiracy, didn't begin till March of 2014, which came at the end of my university degree.
Right.
It was actually created because of university, and my subject matter became about conspiracy in the last year. And then the channel was produced as like a final end of year art piece, which I was kind of just left with after university. And I've rolled with it because by that point I was in. I wasn't just making artwork anymore about conspiracies. And what do these people believe? I was like, I'm one of you. I'm in. I'm going with this. I'm done. Like, let's, I'm all in. Let's just do this, you know. And that's, here I am a decade later, and this is what I do now, you know. Because I believe, because I went in there thinking, oh, maybe I can psychologically analyze the conspiracy theorists and find out why people believe in conspiracy theories, and we can understand conspiracy, you know. And then it didn't take long. It was like, oh, wait a minute, no, wait a minute, no, these people are right. Like, these people have found the truth. They know what's going on. This is real. There's nothing to psychoanalyze. They just figured it out, and we need to, people need to know this stuff. So I kind of changed the channel to okay, we need to understand how this really works, what's going on here, and we need to find a way of getting this message out to people better, because the people who are doing it in that time look and sound insane. No one's taking them seriously. It's terrible. It was a dark age of conspiracy online. No one was producing quality stuff at that point, which could be shown to your friends or family. So I wanted to start creating that kind of stuff. I wanted to speed the change I wanted to see in the world. You know, was my attitude. So I created a channel where I've been making content that kind of you can just show your loved ones quite easily, and they'll hear it told to them in a way that sounds reasonable, you know, and not like a crazy person's telling it to them. When I was at university learning all this stuff, no, I really wasn't like there yet immediately. I went in naive. I went in thinking, I'm going to get my degree. I'm going to be a famous artist. I'm going to my work in the galleries. I'm going to be avant-garde. I'm going to push the boundaries. I'm going to make work about stupid, silly things. I knew how to play the game. I knew how to write a word salad paragraph about nothing and make it sound like it meant something. I knew how to do all that very well. And I've always been able to do that kind of stuff. But I was also, I'm not trying to like brag, I'm technically proficient. I can draw, I can paint, I'm realism, you know, I can actually do these things. So when I got into the gallery, I thought I'd be surrounded with equals who have talent and raw skill that I could learn from and bounce ideas off with. But when I got there, I realized it's full of mediocre, terrible, low quality, unskilled people. And I was jaded. I was like, how am I here and you're here at the same time, and we're going to get the same degree? Do you get what I mean? I got angry. Like, as the years went on, I was kind of looking at all this happening around me, and I just got disillusioned with the whole industry. I went to these cheese and wine circle jerking gallery openings where it's kind of like they were all just sipping away, munching away, looking at this plaster cast of an anus on the wall, applauding one another, you know, as if it meant something. And it's kind of, oh, you should come to my gallery and we put your work in my thing. And it's kind of, it's just a mediocre, patting the mediocre on the back everywhere you saw, you know. And it's like, not what you know or how talented you are, it's just who you know and how much brown nosing you've done. And it's like, I can't play that game. Yeah, you know.
But it's kind of like that for everything. And that's why it's really great that you found your niche here where you could kind of carve out your own deal. Did you do the cover for your clown book?
Yeah, my wife helped me a lot. Oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah. She helped me create the mouth and everything, and she knew you see software better than me to get these things done, because I'm a drawer, I'm not a computer guy, you know what I mean?
Right.
When it comes to creativity, I make things with my hands, but she's very good on the computer. But yeah, I found the background, I did all the editing on the words and the placement of things, and she helped me with the color scheme. I had some terrible ideas about using different colors for the letters, and she said, that just looks terrible, Paul, what are you thinking? And it's kind of, and she was right, I stuck to what you see here, the color theme. So it was a collaborative effort with me and my wife, and she's a creative person too, you know. So
I have a question for you too, because I've actually listened to a lady that I've had on the channel a lot. Her name is Amanda Bies, and she did this entire presentation about art and how there is so much worship in it that people don't realize, and how it can open an altar and such. Did you run across people who would be like, oh, I just like did this in a trance. I just, you know, it just came out. Or do you think that can also be positive? Like, I'd love to hear your whole concept on that, because I think everything is imagination. And I've heard Jesus say it like either way. Like, I've heard him be pro thinking and like pro not thinking. And I do think it's both, right? There's some things that it is both.
Well, I met a different, an eclectic group of people throughout my years, you know, meeting these people who run these galleries and learning with people in my own studios as I was getting my degree and they were doing their art. So everyone came and they kind of had their own style and they all had their own little section where they were in their corner and they just plastered the walls with their style and their creations, you know, and you kind of get marked throughout the 3 years of what you produce and how you think, and you make journals and they get like reviewed every so often. And it's kind of what's your philosophy? Where's your thought processes going? What's your reasonings behind the things you're creating? And I did meet a lot of different people, and some people were there because they thought it'd be a DOS. I think they thought it'd be easy. And in many ways, I suppose it was, because the standards weren't really there. You know, some people were coming at it from a more of a technical angle. Like they can really draw a tree really well. And they did just focused on drawing things really well and focused on the technical skill. Didn't lacked depth, but proficiently skilled, you know. I was somewhere in the middle. I was trying to create beautiful artwork that also had meaning in some way. So I was a little bit pretentious. I probably cringe at some of the things I probably wrote about back in the day, you know. And, my obsessions are perhaps more worldly based and then God focused at that time as well, you know, hedonistically based. I was very much in the psychedelic community at that time, still in that realm, like trying to find myself spiritually by exploring entheogens and stuff. And, you know, I left that life behind, the whole testimonies in there, you know, and before I found Christ. So my work was very much focused on that. But because I was in that realm, I met these people, the other artists who were occultists. They were making occult artwork. They were channeling things to make their artwork. They were doing automatic creation. They were just letting it flow, you know. But then one of them was quite literally an Aleister Crowleyan kind of disciple, a Kenneth Anger follower, you know, and was very much trying to summon demons and channel demons and let the artwork flow through those people. So I did actually know this guy. He was called James. And he was an older gentleman. He must have been in his early 40s, maybe late 30s, which when you're at university, you're kind of surrounded with young 20-year-olds. So he's a little bit older than the rest of us, you know, but he had clearly completely and totally melted his brain with drugs. Like, he was completely gone. He was slurring his words all the time. But he was heavily focused on practicing sex magic, blood ritual magic, Aleister Crowleyan magic, basically, quite simply that. And all of his artwork was just squiggles of intense chaos with eyes coming out of them all the time and jesters and jokers bursting out of it, funnily enough, you know. And it was chaos. He was very much a sigil magic type of guy. He was trying to make sigils to channel spirits and ideas and consciousness and energy in ways that were very automatic. So I did kind of, like I said to your question, I did kind of see that type of thing happening. It is there. There is very much an undercurrent of occultic Satanists who are in the art world having their work put in galleries because it comes under the banner of art. But what they're really doing are just practicing witches and warlocks and wizards. That's all they actually are. But because magic is art, that's how it works, they're in the art world. That's where they are. They are there being presented to us, you know, and they never, like, a magician never reveals his secrets. So they don't tell anybody that. They just present it and let people figure it out. If they know, they know. That's how the occult works. Either you know or you don't, you know. And I met a couple of people like that. He wasn't the only one. There was a few. And because I was in that psychedelic realm, and because I'm just one of those people the weirdos come to, I attract those type of people, and they naturally want to befriend me for some reason. Like, I always humored them. I'm a nice guy. I had conversations with them, and I asked them about their beliefs quite a lot. I actually have I'll probably never show it, but out of respect, but I do have a recording I had with him, which he didn't know I recorded when we were both high together, you know what I mean? Just kind of like yammering on. I was trying to get to understand his beliefs. And honestly, some of the stuff this guy came out with, it's truly, it's just Satanism. It's truly a Luciferian Satanist antichrist. But he believes he's the good guy. This is the irony of it all. He believes it's the right thing to do.
And, well, so does every narcissist, right?
Yeah, and you know, he wants to become his own god of his own reality. And he thinks things like Christianity are there just to make us weak and to not right. let us fulfill our own potential type of thing. And he got the degree like me. And he's out there doing his thing, producing more artwork, and may have got into the galleries and stuff. And it's kind of really there are it's no holds barred on creativity in the schools. Anything is game. I was making artwork about psychedelics. I was literally telling my teachers I'm using drugs in my spare time and making artwork about it. And they didn't stop
Our
me. They didn't care.
Are hilarious.
You know what I mean? Like this is that's the truth.
There's not and a protective bone in their body.
No, and it switched to conspiracy, and they didn't. They raised eyebrows, certainly, but they didn't stop me, you know. They didn't stop me, you know. Which I guess is a good and bad thing. And I think maybe it would have been different at a different school, which has higher standards. I don't know. But I think when it comes to intent, there's many artists who have many different intentions for creating what they want to create. But there is an undercurrent, a tangent of creatives in the industry who know full well what they're doing and that they are practicing witchcraft and are using it for that purpose. And I've met them. I've learnt with them, you know, I've studied with them. They are there, which is why I know now, you know, after the fact that they're out there in the industry. So when I see someone like Marina Abramovich, who's going around doing these blood magic rituals from Aleister Crowley and Theosophy, you know, and this type of thing. It's kind of
literally spirit cooking.
Yeah. It's kind of like, and then posing as a modern art piece. It's like, I know what you're doing. Like and the ignorance that people layer onto it is kind of like, it's a good cover, isn't it? Oh, I'm just an artist. It's a perfect cover, you know, and they're not lying because witchcraft is art. So it's kind of it's a really clever cover, and again it's one of those veil lifted moments. I think if the general public can learn that witchcraft is art, I think a lot of things will make a lot more sense very quickly for them, very quickly. But at the same time, like I said, God is a creator. We are made in the image of God. We are creators, and intent does matter in this respect, I think. And
I was getting to. Yeah, I do think it, and I'm glad you agree with me, just because it's fun to agree with somebody.
We're just not running the industry. That's
right,
the issue.
Exactly.
The other side.
Well,
is,
it's funny because I've been trying to connect you with Maria Farmer, who was the Epstein victim, who was captured actually and kidnapped, according to her, because of her skill. She graduated from Guggenheim. But you know what was really funny to me? One, the people who run Guggenheim, that's not even their real last name. They just picked the name. Like, they changed their name to Guggenheim because it has a presence, which I thought, oh, they're such posers, man. And then the other thing that was fascinating to me is she prays before she does an art piece. And she feels like it's all God doing it. Like, she literally believes that it's like a gift from God. And she really respects that. And I think that's really cool. And so it's interesting to see that kid, same thing, same gift, but it could be used in different ways if they have a gift. I think there's a lot of people that think they're great at art that are not.
Well,
tell me what you think about art therapy. Or if you wanted to say something about that, go for it.
Well, just to kind of finalize this idea that, you know, when you are aligned with God in your everything, in your thoughts, your daily activities, your philosophies, your wants, your desires are all Holy Spirit inspired, shall we say, then the things you naturally produce are good fruits. And I'm not saying the fruits are necessary for salvation. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to put the cart before the horse here or anything. You know, being saved is pretty simple. It's just believe that Jesus Christ is who he said he was and that he rose from the dead and you'll be saved, you know, and trust in him and his works alone and you're covered, you know. But where was I going here? I've lost my train of thought. That's it. It's inspiration. So if you're inspired and under that belief system, you tend to produce beautiful things. And I think a testament to that is the cathedrals, the architecture that was built during the Dark Ages, where everything was predominantly Christian based, you know, the most beautiful things were made during that time because people were inspired and aligned predominantly with the Holy Spirit. And I think when that happens, beauty becomes abundant. And I think many of these beautiful cities, especially in Europe, which are just nothing but Gothic architecture, are a testament to that beauty that can be created if you are wholly aligned with Christ, you know, and those ideologies, you know, that way of being, that very, the way itself, you know, to be conducive to a relationship with the Father. So I do believe that. I think it's possible. That's just to round that off. Obviously, talking about the whole millennial reign thing on my other channel, it kind of links in a way. I've seen where truly inspired men of God can take the world if they have the reins and they're in control of what artwork's being produced. It can get really beautiful very quickly. And this art world we have today is an attack on that, I think. All of it is. And it's actually a great book, which was recommended to me by someone. And this here was written, I think it was written in the 70s. And he's a Christian, this guy, H.R. Rookmaker. And this is honestly just, I've only read a few of it, but he's going through art history from the classics to the modern. And he's basically explaining how it's all fueled in just the destruction of modern Western Christianity and values from the very beginning. And I'm looking forward to getting through the whole thing and then maybe doing a review on the channel and just going through, maybe summarizing his view on this. But anyone who's a Christian who's paying attention to the art industry can see that this is basically an attack on God itself, on God and creativity and divine inspiration within creativity. And it sounds extreme. I know it sounds extreme because most people in the art industry are not Christian. And like I said, the bad guys are running the show. So let's take it back. There you go.
I like that idea. Yeah. Stop feeding them. You know, we're the ones that feed them. If we didn't feed them, they would dissolve. Sure. Zephaniah 2:11 is the one that I'm talking about where God wants to do that. But also movies like do that predictive programming. It's almost as if before there were movies, there was art that maybe did that sort of like that book is saying, the culture shift. It was a way to influence people just like anything else. And so the other thing I was going to ask you, because I was thinking about Maria and then my friend Cheryl back who came out of SRA, and the thing that helped her the most was drawing. She would draw the situations she was in, and I did a horrific show with her, if anyone wants to see it, where she literally shows her art from when she was first healing and what was happening in each situation. But it was a complete gift to her, opening it up in a way that was like gentle for her to be able to be comfortable with it. I was wondering if you have any thoughts on art therapy.
Well, I've never experienced anything like art therapy specifically myself, but as somebody who has always drawn my entire life since being a child, it certainly feels good to be locked into the zone, shall you call it, this place where time doesn't exist and you're just creating something. I've been there many times, you know, and it's like meditation. It truly is. When you're actually like drawing something and 5 hours will pass and it'll feel like 30 minutes, if that. You know, because you're so fixated on creating this thing and focusing on it. And there's something special about making something. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It's already special because you made it. Do you get what I mean? Like,
100%. From Christmas to June, I did 6 month fast of alcohol. And it gave me a lot of time because I didn't want to go out or do different things that would be in that environment. And so I was at home. And so I have a little craft room in my house. And I went in there and literally built a character that I had done a children's book of that I still haven't put out. It's just like my little baby that came to me in March of 2008. And then I birthed this thing over the 6 months, and I'm just in love with her. She's like my secret project, but it's really interesting to me how taking that one element, that alcohol, and I'm not even a huge drinker, but just that one thing turned me into somebody that, you know, okay, what am I going to do with this time? And it was, I wanted to create, which I think is really cool. That's why I really love that you have a second channel that is your hobby channel. I think it's so incredible. I think it's going to be huge.
I hope so. Who knows? I do.
I think it's going to be huge. I think that a lot of people are going to get educated through it as well, because I'm telling you, it was like shocking to go, oh, I know George, I know this. Why did I not know any of this? Like, I didn't know any of the stuff. Although I did agree with you guys that, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe supposedly denies that her flowers look like a vajayjay. But it quite clearly seems to be like the whole point of her art. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think in terms of back to therapy, I mean, Georgia O'Keeffe was just gaslighting us all when she said those type of things. She knew full well what she was doing, and yeah, whatever. But back to like therapy ideas, like I think making something or creating a piece of artwork can communicate an idea or a complex thought or idea in your brain a lot better than words can. So a lot of therapy things, like you sit on a bench and you tell somebody your feelings or how you're thinking and you try and talk it out, don't you? But sometimes talking just doesn't work. There's a limitation to human language, word, mouth noises. There's a limitation to that. So a 26 character alphabet, you can only convey so much, especially with the English language as well. It's actually very limited and not very poetic, and it's not very easy to express ourselves with such a language as well. And I think art transcends that thing, that barrier. And I think you could, if you have trauma and you need to process it, trying to represent a visual image of that trauma and get it out into the world onto paper is a good way of letting it go. And it could just look like it could look like chaos on a canvas. It could look like an absolute mess once you're finished. But if you get it out there and you can visualize it, visualizing it is the first step to processing, I think. And I think there's something to say for creating something to process trauma. Absolutely. I can believe that. I made many things throughout my life when I was at a low point, you know, and things I'm not proud of as well. Things that I wouldn't show to the public because it's horrible. But I needed to get it out.
I think that's great. Like it helps with the, I don't know. To me, it's kind of like there's women that I know who have been emotionally abused and also physically abused. And they said it was better to be physically abused because you had proof that somebody else could look at it and they could completely understand what happened to you. Whereas if somebody had, you know, if they were trying to describe what it felt like emotionally or how they were groomed or whatever, they couldn't, people, they just never felt seen. And I do think that if nothing else, it would be a witness to where you've been. And I do know that, what's her name? Kathy O'Brien, who was like the famous MKUltra escapee, one of the first whistleblowers against Congress and blah, blah, blah. She highly suggests that everyone should pull pictures from magazines and do anything that triggers you. Like you look at it, hold on to it, find out, which I think is a really a good way to self-deliver, if that makes sense.
No, it does. Like that, like artwork is magic. It's profound. It has power, real power. And if you're done making the artwork as well, like I said, it can really have profound impacts on your own worldview, psychology. It can help. It can really help. Like I said, I had like suicide in the family when I was younger. And I made artwork about it. Artwork, again, I wouldn't show people. Artwork, which is dark, twisted, weird, you know. But at like 15 years old, you need to kind of process it in a big way, you know, and trying to understand what was going on. And that's what I did. That's how I did it. And I feel like it helped me a lot.
That's kind beautiful. Of
not internalize the trauma in a sense and visualize it and understand it. And it's a face your fear type of situation as well. You know, when you're scared of something, you can spend your whole life running away from it, or you can go head first into it and get to understand it. You can still be terrified, but it's good to at least understand it, you know. And I'm scared, for example, of a specific type of spider called a daddy long leg.
Really?
Okay. Or specifically, the scientific name is a Phalcus phalangoid. And
you're really afraid of it.
Yeah. Well, I understand it very well because I'm terrified of them. Something about the way they look.
Yeah.
Just gets under my skin. I can't bear to be in the same room as one. Like it's something about it. I don't know what it is. It's the way they look. It's like a skeleton. It's a long-legged skeleton, you know, that walks around. And And I'm not talking about the fly, the crane fly, although they're freaky. It's something with things with long limbs just freak me out. I can't explain it, you know. But this particular spider, they always hang upside down. They make a very messy web. They eat other spiders. They don't eat flies. They don't care about them. And they don't wait for spiders to come into their web. They just go for a walk at night and find a spider and just kill it. That's what they do, you know. They have no fear at all. But they're like this tiny little thing. They have a body that's just so small with these extremely long legs. But the poison, the venom, is far more powerful than any other spider. They're just so small, they can't kill a human because their teeth can't get through our skin. But to a spider, it can. You can kill them quite easily. And it's for the size of its body, its venom is ridiculously potent, you know. And I know everything about this thing. I know everything about it. I got to understand it intimately. And I have it tattooed on my stomach.
Oh, I made wow.
I made an art piece about it. And it's I have a spider. I'm not going to show anybody. This is just for me, you know. My wife will tell you, she can confirm, you know, but I have this spider tattooed on my stomach and it's a piece of artwork I made of it. It's just a black and white lined drawing, simplified version of its silhouette. But it's there as a reminder, like, I'm scared of this thing, but I've integrated it.
Know your enemy.
Yeah, but I respect it greatly that I got to know it and that I have it on me as a reminder of this thing, you know, and it's kind of, although I still can't, I could never touch one. I can get close to them now. Yeah. I can examine them. I can appreciate them for the extremely terrifying form that shouldn't exist and is an abomination to all creation as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to have words with God when I meet him and ask him what the hell he was thinking when he made this thing. But the artwork, the process of creating this artwork about it and having it on me did help in a big way. I know there's a lot to be said about tattoos. As a Christian, I understand I got this before I was saved, you know, and that was my process at the time. To understand it and to deal with it. That was my therapy, you know, and art was involved. I think in many ways, you know, I'm all for it. I think art therapy could be a great thing. I mean, there's quite a famous one of it, of art therapy being used in mental asylums. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the outsider art, it's called. That's the specific name for it. And it's people who aren't in society. They've been locked away from society for obvious reasons. Like they are lunatics, like dangerous to themselves and other people often. Or just completely schizophrenic, delusional, detached from reality people. You know, they're not here with us. They might be next to you, but they're not with you. Those type of people. Well, they often use art therapy to kind of calm them down and help them. And some of the stuff they create is absolutely insane. I think his name is Lewis. I want to say maybe perhaps Lewis Carroll. I could be wrong with the name there. But I did do a few videos on him. And he liked to draw cats. And he was a famous illustrator of cats.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I saw a movie about that.
Yeah, yeah. And he actually was quite a famous artist, just drawing cats like humans, doing human things, you know. But he lost his mind as time went on. And he ended up creating the most psychedelic demon-looking cat monsters you've ever seen. And they're incredible. They're actually incredible to behold. And they're a testimony to like his breakdown. But clearly, doing that helped ground him in some way. It did something for him, you know, and it was an expression of how he saw the world, which he's managed to communicate to the rest of us. And in many ways, it's probably helped us understand schizophrenia in a big way as well. In many ways, it's kind of, there's meaning.
Well, and I think
it does
show you how like demons are always running around in the background, whether we want to or not. And it's why I do believe it's really important to read and pray. And then you think about like, even the word medium, like what medium are you going to, what medium do you work through? Whereas then there's mediums that, you know, channel dead people. And so it is kind of interesting that it's even the same word. But when you were talking about the Daddy Long Legs, all I could think about is Bill Gates and his mosquitoes and flies that he's making. And it makes me wonder, how do we know that it wasn't like something created, I don't know, and released years ago. Who I don't trust anybody these days. But there's lots of things I don't think God made, but I could be wrong.
I know what you're saying. I made a video about crustaceans not that long ago about this as well, and lobsters and stuff, these monsters of the sea. It's kind of like, why would you make these bottom feeding? And I understand they kind of do serve a purpose in a way. By the way, right. It was Louis Wayne. That was the name of the artist who made these things.
Okay. I've never seen that one. I remember seeing a movie about like a guy that became famous from just drawing cats, but maybe it gets darker and darker as he goes on.
Oh, as time goes on, his creations take a whole, they become devoid of reality. That's supposed to be a cat. And they get more and more and people have argued like, oh, that's not really what happened. He also did normal cats at the same time. He was just experimenting and stuff like this. It's kind of like the guy's style altered drastically. He used to just draw cats like this playing golf, for example.
Yes, okay, then that, you know, is what I mean? Him.
A bit of fun. And
there's a great little movie about him
wearing a top hat, being all jolly and stuff. And then as when he lost his mind, they kind of turned into this thing and started getting more and more like a DMT trip. Each one looks like a perfect representation. It looks like,
have you ever worked with Procreate, how you can use the radials and so you can do quadrants and then and so that's what it reminds me of, because it's so symmetrical.
Fractaled. It's perfectly fractaled. Yeah, and it's incredible that he could do that just freehand. But he must have been seeing some stuff.
Wow.
He must have been seeing some stuff to be able to do it, is what I'm saying. Like, he saw things and he drew what he saw. That's all you can think, yeah. And for the time, you know, before Photoshop or any of these things we can use to help us and aid us in many ways, like, this guy was, he was creating some incredible things. That boggled the mind, but this was therapy for him. This is what he was creating in like mental institutions. You know what I mean? This is what he did to kind of cope with losing grip with his sense perception. And again, there's a lot to be said about the influence of demons in this and everything else, and the DMT realm, and who knows what he did to suffer this.
So what do you have coming up on the channel? Can you give a teaser at all, or are you keeping it all a secret?
Well, I have. There's a whole other section on there, and I've released a couple now, which are visiting artists, and it's kind of, I'm just getting people who are artists out there to come on and share their work. I want it to be positive as well.
Idea.
And just people who are actually making things and working in the industry come and tell their stories, how the industry actually is, you know? So we've had, like I said, Christopher Gardner,
who runs.
Wait, that's Tim Lassie
Dome guy, yes.
And then the Dome guy, yeah. So the Dome guy is Christopher Gardner. He runs a podcast called Biocharisma, and it's named after biochar, which is a type of carbon surface layer of sediments, which you can make yourself by heating wood to a certain temperature and this type of thing. Yeah. And that is pure carbon, basically, which can be used to strengthen structures and cement and all sorts of things. And he works with it heavily in his own constructions. And he makes domes for a living. That's what his job is. He designs them from scratch himself. He incorporates geometry into the arches. He specifically goes off this Japanese style of dome building, which creates star effects out of bent metal. He uses this method of compacting sandbags or some kind of cement sand to create the base, and he creates these beautiful pieces of artwork basically that people live in and once they're finished, which are domes, which are earthquake proof, tornado proof. They're basically one with nature, completely impervious to like destruction of nature, and
probably
that was
mold proof too. Probably mold proof.
Maybe. I think that has a lot to do with the energy is involved in living in a place like that as well, and the care. But he basically went out to learn how to do this originally out of necessity, because he lived in Costa Rica, which suffers like thousands of earthquakes daily and landslides and you know, very wet, humid atmosphere. And they always build squares there, houses made of squares, which always collapse and just get destroyed all the time. And he moved to Costa Rica and he kind of needed to build a permanent structure because he couldn't afford a failure, you know, and tried to start this construction company. And he ended up becoming somebody who made domes, and someone paid for him to go. He tells his whole story. It's incredible. He fell into
it. Yeah, I was only halfway through that one. I've loved every one of them though. Like everything that you've done on there, I love it.
Oh, thank you. Well, like I said, he has a great story. Go and follow Christopher Gardner on his own channel, Biocharisma. He's actually good friends with Owen Benjamin funnily enough.
Oh, okay.
And they're all, yeah, it's, but he does his own thing, and he's done work with the Bertaria community, because they have their own commune stuff going on. He's built stuff for them as well. And like I said, he's just gone from strength to strength. His skills are getting better and better as he goes on. He has his own team, and he's just building these brilliant domes everywhere. And, you know, he has this creative mind about him, which, and his story is very inspiring. And these are the type of people I want to get on, who are like very much in the industry trying to make it and have this unique perspective. So Tim Lattie reached out to me, who was basically an illustrator for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, for G.I. Joe. Worked for Mattel Comics and Nickelodeon. He's worked for the NBA. He's worked for many industries and people involved in this, who, you know, he makes Ghostbusters, another big name he's worked for, and he makes comic books. He draws and illustrates for them. And this is like daily bread and butter, you know what I mean? He's drawing all the time. He's always creating, and he has his style. And just a guy who's on the inside who's watches my channel. He's a conspiracy theorist like the rest of us, you know. And he reached out to me and said, yeah, come on, share your story. And we had a great talk. And again, it's just about creativity and what it means to be creative in the industry today. And I try and bring some conspiratorial stuff in there every now and then. But really, it's just a place for people with talent who know what's going on to share their work, because they don't get the attention they deserve in this industry. They're not going to get their work in the galleries. They're not going to get the spotlight put on them very often in this day and age, because they're not in it for that. You know, they're just talented people who need to feed themselves, basically. And I want to give those people that platform. So the next one coming up is actually a regular on my channel. She's called Elizabeth. She has a channel called Rejoice Artworks. She's very much a similar background to me. She had a psychedelic background, and she's obviously been working in the world for design industries and things like this. And she wants to basically be an artist, but she's technically proficient, fantastic drawer. I've had her work in the background of my video. I can't find it right now, but she makes these beautiful paintings involving birds and gothic architecture, rose windows and things this. And I talked to her recently, and I just need to edit the content and make a show out of it. So a visiting artist is going to be the next video. It's going to be her artwork showcased. And it's just to get people to go and buy her work. No, go to her website, buy her work, you know.
What a great idea. That is so awesome. So kind of you, too. But this is why I love you guys. You guys are good guys. And so tell me, there was one other thing I was good. What were you talking about just before that? I was so fascinated by that story. I lost what I was going to ask you, and it was something that I want. And usually I write it down so I don't forget, but I was like, I won't forget that, but I did.
Was it about biocharisma, or was it about the Louis?
No, it had something to do with Maria Farmer and Guggenheim, but I don't know where it went. It's gone. It's okay. And so is there anything else that you would like to make sure people know about the channel? Because I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you probably have another something to do tonight.
I've got my own Truth of Therapy session podcast to do. Yeah, I've actually had a week off. I've been off since last Sunday. It's my birthday on the 4th. So I turned 33.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I turned 33. So I just took the week off. And you're the first thing I've done since getting back, to be honest. So after this, I'm going to go do my own live show. But I mean, I pretty much explained everything. You know, I'm an Understanding Conspiracy. That's my channel. That's where you'll find everything I do predominantly. And when I have the time, I'll chuck a video out on Understanding Creativity about something to do with the art world. And there's already some great content on there. There's going to be regular stuff coming with Susan. She still has at least three presentations in her yet to come, which are just fantastic. They're just
incredible.
She's the art teacher I always wish I had when I was at university. She's just telling me everything that, how we should have been taught, you know. And I'm happy to give her my platform to speak, to be honest. That's all that is. So
look
forward to that.
Soothing voice too. She has such a sweet, soothing voice. It's beautiful. She's
absolutely
so adorable.
I think there's been a bit of a culture shock for Susan, because obviously she's putting herself out there and to the internet. The internet is a bit of a wild west. It's not always friendly, yeah, you know. But I think show her some support if you do go and listen. Show her some love. Most people are like 98% of the people who comment, highly respect her, love what she's doing, and she's doing a great job. But there's still that 2% out there who do not understand at all where we're coming from, and they're quite vitriolic, very hateful people. Do not want
That's
to
in
hear
them.
It, you know. And I think she's getting a thicker skin now. I think after the first two episodes, and like,
it kind of breaks you in. Like, once you do a few of them and you get so much hate, I mean, for the dumbest things too. I got the most recent one was somebody didn't like that there was a flamingo on my hat. You know, it's like,
how dare you?
And then they were saying Jay Dreamer had an octopus and you had a flamingo and you guys are up to something. And I'm like, first of all, his is a jellyfish, not an octopus, but okay, like whatever. But that is how crazy it gets. So just tell her that we all, it's part of the initiation. Welcome to YouTube.
That's right.
The other thing that I was going to say too is that before I was going to have you on, I looked up some crazy trivia for Art, and I was going to see if you could guess who's who. And there's just a couple of them. If you have time, if you don't, we can go.
We can try it, but I'm probably going to let you down on this one, but go ahead. Let's try it. Let's try it.
No, I just want to see if you can guess because they're so weird. I think they're so random that like for you to know would be very strange, but you never know. Maybe you would. So somebody was famous for their art, but more notorious for their hygiene. He reportedly never bathed and rarely changed clothes, so much so that his garments had to be peeled off his body when he died.
I feel like I've heard this before, but I'm blanking on this one. No, go on.
So that one's Michelangelo.
Okay. That sounds about right.
Which kind of makes sense when you think about it, because it was like back in the day, you know, people... probably a lot of people didn't shower much. I just blew that one. So that one we can't do. Okay, so this one was a vegetarian and animal lover known to buy caged birds and set them free. Despite his fame, he completed over 30 paintings in his lifetime and many were unfinished. And you wouldn't think he would not finish something because everything he does is so perfect.
He was an animal lover. You say he was a vegetarian?
Uh-huh.
Ding, ding, ding. He only did 30 paintings, but everything he did was perfect, but he never finished.
He completed fewer than 30 paintings in his lifetime.
Right. Is he actually known for his art, this guy, or is he?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No, I you're losing me. Go on.
Okay, that's all right. This is fun. I never expected you to get them. I just wanted to see if you could, because I think it would be amazing if you did. Leonardo da Vinci.
Okay.
And then let's do one more. No, that one would give it away.
Give me an easy one. Come on.
Oh, okay. I'll give you an easy one. I think it'll be obvious. He claimed the idea for one of his signature objects came from watching camembert cheese melt in the sun. He also had the bizarre habit to capture dream images. He'd nap holding a key over a plate. When he dozed off, the key would drop, wake him, letting him recall his visions, which is actually really smart.
Is that Dali by any chance?
Yeah.
I think
Clocks. Yeah. And then, this one's kind of funny. You might know this one. A drawing. He has a drawing supposedly on the moon of a sketch that he did of Apollo 11, a lunar module that was left there in anti-gravity by astronauts.
So I'm trying to think of the era here. Was he a pop artist?
Yeah. Well, right. I guess you'd call it that. I don't know. I'm not an art person.
Was it Warhol?
Yes. Yeah, right, you got two of them. We'll let you go on a whim.
Okay, there we go.
Enjoy your truth or thing. I will probably be watching it. Also, if you ever want to have somebody review a book with you on when you do a book review, if you do that book, I'll come on with you. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Sure thing. Absolutely. Like I say,
I'm just offering.
It's a team collaborative effort. Most everything I do is, you know, so I'm happy to, if anyone wants to get involved, including yourself, Carmen, reach out to me, email me understandingconspiracy@gmail.com and we'll get it on the books and we'll figure it out. Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That sounds good. Yeah, thank you very much. I hope everybody has a good finish to their 4th of July weekend and your birthday week.
That's right. Yeah.
I want you to get together.